Welcome to the official Espigan podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Noisley.
Hello, everybody. It's another Espigan podcast, and I'm happy to be here with you and with Dr. Natasha Dragutinovic. Dragutinovic, that's her married name. She was Antichava. So did I get that right, Antichava? Before she married. She is a gastroenterologist, hepatologist, a jack of all trades, you might say, working in the ancient Hungarian city of Nándorfehérvár, and which we know today as Belgrade, the White City, the White Fort, high above the Danube. She there was, until recently, employed at the principal children's hospital in Serbia. She has since made a transition to a private practice setting, and I think we have in her a remarkable opportunity to learn what it's like to work in a community that, for political reasons, unfortunately, enjoys less than the full support of the European community. She was born in 1978, and the Yugoslav Wars began just as she was heading into her teens, when she was 12 or 13. So she grew up in a war zone and has been making her way as a physician in a post-war Serbia, and has encountered, I would expect, a number of difficulties that, thank God, most of us don't share. Natasha, welcome, and let's talk about what it's like trying to learn pediatric gastroenterology and hepatology in Serbia, trying to practice according to best standards, and how Espigan can possibly contribute to supporting you and others like you.
Well, first of all, thank you. It is a really privilege to be today with you and to speak, and thank you for invitation.
You've had to do everything, haven't you? Working at the university hospital where they have a transplantation service, your particular interest, if I understand things correctly, has been in nutritional support, enteral nutritional support, not just for building up patients for liver transplantation and making sure that they do well afterward, but also a number of other conditions. What was the service like when you began your training as a pediatric gastroenterologist?
I started 17 years ago. It was really hard period in that time. It was really just after the war and everything. So I don't know. It was really hard to find the job. So we needed to volunteer for years. The modern gastroenterology was in Europe and in the America was developing very fast, and we were trying to keep up with that, but it was really hard. I really had the opportunity to first of all to learn from Professor Perisic, who was in that point chief of endoscopy ward. And we knew that if we want to do modern gastroenterology, we need to do endoscopy. We need to learn every day to read a lot and to see what is going on in Europe. It is really hard for us because Serbia is, I think, very important part of the Europe, but we are not the part of European Union. And that position is very hard for us, especially for us who are working in a medical field. Why is hard? It is hard because we do not have, as a pediatrician, I can go abroad and speak with my colleagues, talk about the problems. But as a doctor who needs to improve the manual skills, like in an endoscopy or surgeons or interventive radiologists, we're in a huge problem. So we cannot keep up our knowledge with all things that are going on in Europe because we are not the part of Europe Union. So I don't know. Those are all problems that we are really, really have here.
It's an amazing situation that you've just described. First off, immediately after the war, there was no money, there was no funding, and there were no jobs. So you had effectively to work as an unpaid intern in order to have the chance to learn and to develop your professional skills. Luckily, you found a mentor who encouraged you in acquiring endoscopy skills and encouraged you in progressing within the field of pediatric gastroenterology. But as you say, you can't do everything from books. You have to be there at the bedside. You have to use your hands and think about concrete individual patients. You had a chance to spend some time abroad, however. A fellowship of sorts, was that in France?
I think the more important fellowship I had was in Italy, in Bergamo. And I think that that fellowship, it lasts for 6 months. And I was really lucky to be there with the whole team.
I'm going to interrupt you just for a moment. How far along in your training were you when this opportunity became available to you? And how did it drop into your lap?
Yes, it was, in that point, it started when I was in fourth, I was working for 4 years in University Children's Hospital. And I was volunteering, I was working as a clinical doctor for 2 years, and it my fellowship in pediatrician then should start it. And for 2 years before that, we started a program of liver transplantation in children. So we started to cooperation with Papa Giovanni Hospital in Bergamo in Italy. And there was an agreement to send doctors from my hospital, University Children's Hospital, to Bergamo, surgeon and young doctor, that was me, as a coordinator for liver transplantation.
So you were there when the program began.
Yes.
As we say, you got in on the ground floor.
Exactly.
Okay. And how many colleagues do you have at the university hospital, both when this began and when you left in the last few months?
In that beginning, I had my professor and one of my colleagues, unfortunately, she is not anymore with us.
Mm.
And there were just three of us working in that part about when we talk about endoscopy and children hepatology.
Three people? That's
only,
not enough. Yes. That's not enough to staff an on-call rota.
you need to see, even if I'm, for example, interested only, not only, but in liver transplantation or liver issues, I need to know the whole gastroenterology. Right now, there are, I would say, five people on gastroenterology ward, with one young fellow that is working. And we have two hospitals in Belgrade that are dealing with the, I would say, tertiary level of healthcare system. So there are not enough gastroenterologists, and we need to take care about all problems, not to be just dedicated to one part of like hepatology, IBD, or something like that. We need to know to do everything.
Specialization is such a luxury to be able to afford one person who dedicates herself, say, to dysmotility problems. No, you have to do it all. And the challenge of doing everything at top level performance is a very substantial one. But we're going to go back now to when you went to the airfield with your suitcase and said goodbye to your husband and got on the plane to Bergamo.
Yes, it was. I think that was one of the best period in my life when I talk about my work.
Uh-huh.
In that time, Lorenzo D'Antiga, he's now, I think, the one of the Bergamo is one of the best center in Europe when we talk about liver transplantation in children and in adults also. It is very really huge center. And we have really privileged to send our children over there. Lorenzo came in that point when I come to Bergamo. Lorenzo also came to be a chief, and it was I must say really pleasure to learn from him, to learn the medicine, to learn everything about the liver, but also to learn the way of thinking, the way of leadership. So he's really great, and his doctors, the whole team. I would like to say just a few names: Dr. Paola Stropa, Michela Bravi, Dr. Di Giorgio, Dr. Nicastro, Valeria Casotti. So they are really great because they helped me so much for when I came back and started to follow up patient after liver transplantation. They were really always there for me to help about any issue we had. And if we have a patient with some other liver problem that we cannot solve or we need a consultation, Dr. Lorenzo is always there to help us.
I can't agree with you more about Lorenzo. So you also knew him back when he had dark hair instead of gray hair?
Yes. He was a little bit gray in that time also.
Well, he's a silver fox now, I have to say.
Yeah.
Just to have somebody there whom you can telephone and in front of whom you don't have to worry about. Do I seem stupid by asking this question? There's friendship behind that. There's friendship and support. And if he laughs at you and says, Natasha, you've forgotten everything I told you, you're not going to be hurt. Instead, you'll take his recommendations and move forward and help the patient. So personal contacts are what have made it possible for you to thrive and to build that service, expanding it along with your professor from 3 to now you say 6 and a trainee?
Yes.
I think that's an accomplishment. And you managed that within the last, was it 10 years?
Well, yes, I would say 14 years.
14 years. And, well, I know that you have to do everything there, and you have to do it all very well. But among the things that you chose to make your very own has been enteral nutrition. How did that come to attract your attention? I'm sure that you're a very good hepatologist, but as a pediatric hepatopathologist, I'm a little bit offended that you decided to ignore the liver.
No, I didn't ignore it. I adore a liver. I adore a liver from my student time. When I was a student, I wanted to be a hepatologist. So usually they say, take after what you want, maybe that wish will come. But when we talk about nutrition, I really like it because I think everything is connected, and bowels and liver and nutrition, and especially we have problems with our kids that we were sending them to liver transplantation because they were very malnourished. And one of the reasons that I dedicated to this problem is because I wanted to send the kids in the best shape that we can, so they can, when they start the liver transplant program, they will have the less complication after liver transplantation. We know that nutrition is very important part of that, and that was the first reason why I was dedicated to nutrition, especially to enteral nutrition. Also, in that time when I started to be the part of gastroenterology unit and started to learn and to see how endoscopy is performing, the percutaneous gastrostomy was introduced in our hospital.
Oh.
So I really had I was at the beginning from the first start. It started in my hospital.
Interventional endoscopy.
Yes.
Did we use that phrase? Yeah, interventional endoscopy. Okay.
And it was when I did my first percutaneous gastrostomy. I was really, really happy. And now we have a really experienced team now. We put it by pull method. We put percutaneous gastrostomy and we do it together with our surgeons as a team, and we are really, really now experienced. We don't have any significant problems, and we do really small kids below 3 kilos. We do kids with very severe kyphoscoliosis, and we have really good also anesthesiologists to help us with all issues that we have with lungs and everything. So I think that when we talk about percutaneous gastrostomy, the whole team that I was working with is really experienced and really great. And I must say that in this field we are somehow better than in other centers, because when child who need percutaneous gastrostomy, the child doesn't wait for several weeks. We do it in 7 days. So we organize ourselves because we are aware that it would be really helpful, and we don't want to put him for a long time on nasogastric tube.
I take your point, and that is indeed something to be proud of. But something you haven't mentioned yet, and I know that your colleagues are waiting for you to say it, is home enteral nutrition provided by tube feedings, particularly tube feedings that use a cutaneous stoma, require a very substantial support staff among dietitians, nutritionists, home care nurses. What sort of arrangements are you able to make for that in Serbia, and what arrangements are you able to make for the parts of Serbia that lie outside the capital?
That is an issue. Everything is happening in Belgrade. So when we have a patient who needs home enteral nutrition, the doctors and the nurses are always on the phone. So we don't have services that covers a patient who lives, for example, in south part of Serbia.
Mm-hmm.
If there is any issue, if we talk when the patient needs to be on enteral pump, it is organized like a hospital borrows to the parent's enteral pump. We learned while the patient and the mother usually or caregiver is with patient in hospital, we learned them how to manipulate with the pump. And when we are assured that they know everything they need to know, we send them home. But we are 24 hours available for parents if something is happening.
I guess you have to be 24 hours available for parents if something goes wrong, if there's a crisis, no matter what. And as you expand your service, no doubt there will be nurse practitioners who take over a larger proportion of this role for you and for your team. But it's a lot to manage, particularly in a... Serbia is not small. Serbia's got a lot of people and a lot of area to cover. How many patients do you follow? Or how many liver transplants a year? How many outpatient visits?
Okay, when we talk about liver transplantation, usually per year we have 5 to 10 or 12 kids per year. Mm-hmm. But usually it was around 5, 6, 7 patients per year. Until now we have around 40 patients that had only liver transplantation, and we have 10 patients who had kidney and liver transplantation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about it. But when we talk about gastroenterology ambulance, well, there is a crowd. there is really a crowd because the organization of healthcare system in Serbia is quite different than in Europe, quite different than in Italy or in France that I was. For example, in France, in gastroenterology ambulance, you will have 5 to maybe 10 patients, but in Serbia, you have 50, not 15, but 50.
Get out of here. This is for a clinic?
Yes, this is
50
for a clinic.
People, 50 people?
50 per day.
You don't have enough benches for all those people.
So it is like a roller coaster. You really need to take anamnesis very fast, to examine child very fast, to speak very fast. But anyway, we did it. And it was really funny because, for example, if the child who has celiac disease comes to the ambulance and parents bring the younger child because no one could take care of him at home,
right,
and he would say, okay, but you see, my child is somehow little, he doesn't grow so as we think he should. You would say, okay, go, I will check him also, and we will see if he's maybe celiac. So that is, we are really...
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We have, I hope, at least some francophone listening in. We're not going to be doing a podcast in French anytime soon. I'm not up for that. But I don't want you to ignore the time that you spent in France. At what stage in your professional development were you able to learn there?
Well, I learned a lot. The reason why we were in Lyon was to improve our knowledge in enteral, but especially in parenteral nutrition.
Okay.
And yes, but I must say that some things are really needed to be urgently changed in Serbia. And the first thing is parenteral nutrition, because I think that we are really, really in a... I don't know how to say it. We really need to improve this part because we are not even at the beginning. I think that we are late for more than 50 years.
That's distressing to hear.
Yes.
Is it a problem with making up the solutions that are necessary? With the pharmacy side of the work, or
it is the organization. I think that people who are dealing with management of the hospitals and everything need to be aware what parenteral nutrition means. That you need to have really separate rooms, separate people who will do it, and how to control it and everything. So. We are still, I think, not...
There's work to be done, and it's resource-intensive work. And
yes.
And in a stressed economy,
yes.
Then finding the resources to dedicate to a program such as that one. Well, liver transplantation is prestigious. liver transplantation will attract people, but the day-to-day slog of parenteral nutrition and taking care, it isn't so glamorous, is it?
Well, I must say that I think it is glamorous. I think that nutrition is, even if it is enteral or parenteral, it really helps to the, it really helps. Now in Belgrade, we have parenteral nutrition, those bags 3-in-1. Mm-hmm, and it really helped us to save the lives to some kids. Really, I now I'm thinking about some of them that with that bags we were really able to nourish them and to help them to fight with other things that patients need to fight with. But
Natasha, I apologize. I'd never want to speak badly about nutrition, parenteral or enteral. Oh well. Maybe we should turn to a different topic. Just briefly, how can members of ESPGHAN who hear this podcast, who have resources available, support you and your team, both at the university hospital and in the private practice setting to which you've recently transferred your activities? What can ESPGHAN do more for you to help make up for some of the deficiencies, the deficits that politics have caused?
Well, first of all, I always think that we need, as Serbian doctors, we need to involve more. I think that ESPGHAN is offering now a lot, and now we are we have more opportunities to go to all master classes and everything that ESPGHAN is organizing. So I think that we should involve more. But I was thinking about it, what ESPGHAN could do, and I will be there are maybe several things that I would like to point. First of all, those guidelines are really great, but at the bottom of the guidelines it is written send it to pediatric gastroenterologist. So sometimes we need
like who?
yeah, exactly. But
that's 50 kids in your hallway.
And sometimes you are that pediatric gastroenterologist who needs help how to solve some of the problems. The other part, I think what should be really great to have in ESPGHAN, like these podcasts, are maybe some video channels where we can see some things like in endoscopy, what is performed and how to perform it, what things you need to do it, but with more practical issues, because we are not able to travel as much as we wish and to see, because we are overwhelmed with our patients. So I think it would be really nice, because as we read now in a new ESPGHAN guideline for percutaneous gastrostomy, there are some things that you can do besides surgery, how to deal with, for example, gastrocutaneous fistula when you take out PEG. So yes, I can go to some online videos and to see it, but I will much more like if I could see it, that some ESPGHAN teacher do it, and I will prefer to see it like that, in that way. So it would be nice. And the thing that I would really like, but I'm not sure it will be possible, that doctors from Serbia can really go abroad and practice their manual skills as doctors from other parts of European Union, because if we gastroenterology and hepatology is really multidisciplinary team, it is not one man show. I can read a lot, I can know what patients needs, but I really need to cooperate with surgeons and interventive radiologists. And because of this bad politics, we cannot improve our skills because we cannot go abroad and do it. And this is really, really huge problem for us. I can contact the former center. We can speak about, but at the end, if we can solve it, we need to send patient abroad. And it is really expensive for parents. It is really expensive for the country. And we don't improve our skills.
At this time, as we wind down a podcast, we generally ask the person being interviewed to share with us something that speaks to her understanding, her appreciation of what it is like to be from her country, something that will convey a little bit of that country to, in this instance, those of us who haven't had the chance to visit Serbia. Natasha, what song have you chosen, and who sings it?
Well, I must say, I chose the song that is one let's say ballad, the rock song, and it is written, and first of all the name of the musician is Bajaga, but his song is singing a really great woman with great voice. Her name is Divna, and usually she sings the Orthodox music. But now with her voice, this beautiful song sounds even better. So in this way, I just wanted to show you how the Serbian people are really nice and beautiful, and it is really joy to be the part of this nation. And I would really like to invite you all to be our guests and to listen good music, to eat good food, drink good wine, and to have really great time.
Thank you. And what is the title of the song?
The title of the song is in Serbian, Od kada tebe volim.
Od kada tebe volim, okay.
Yes. And if we translate it in English, since the moment I love you.
The moment I love you. What a beautiful title. I look forward to hearing it.
If you would like to listen to the song, check out our Spotify playlist, Espigan's Favorite Songs.
What a lovely title for a song. Thank you very much, Natasha, for sharing this song with us and for being our guest today.
Thank you. Goodbye.